February 14th, 1988, Marsha Ripp and Chuck Coffey.
Outside you, through a naming of your family, your schools, jobs, dealers, exhibitions, awards, and so forth. Now let's talk about inside you. What got you started? What are your developing influences, expressions, and sustenance? First things first, the influence of your parents and extended family.
Well, it's hard to say. I don't know. I don't have any recollection of any particular thing starting me. When I was young, I used to like to draw, and when I was a child, I was drawing in school and things like that. I used to like to make dress-up dolls, I guess, and all kinds of familiar objects or whatever. My mother used to drag me to the internationals when I was a child, but in those days they mostly had nudes lying on couches and things like that, and a salon painting, and I don't think that it inspired me too much more than some giggles and being rather naughty about it all with my girlfriends. We used to try to figure out what the anatomy was through these ventures of mine out to the Carnegie Museum with my mother. If she'd have known that, I don't think she would have taken me. But then as time went on, I guess I became more serious about it, and then went and was much more interested. I said before, when I was doing high school, I went to Sam Rosenberg's class. I was in a special art class that Miss Dollard had. It was at Alderdice. She had a special class, and she had about three or four students in it, and that was it. And there was another girl and myself. And matter of fact, it was Sidney Simon and Orrin Rayfield. I think Evie Eisner and myself are the only ones we can remember. I think, very much influenced by her interest in art. And then as time went on, I decided I didn't want to go to remain in art school because, I think boys took over. I did continue to go to Sam's class for off and on until almost before I got married, so I guess I didn't stop completely. My mother was a very, very, she didn't draw at all, but she had a tremendous interest in art, and she used to sew beautifully, and she always wanted me to she thought that I should be a dress designer, but she didn't know I was going to get married and have to live in Pittsburgh. You try and be a designer in Pittsburgh. So when you're married before you finish college, you can't go off. So I went to work for Eleanor Reamer as a fashion coordinator at that point at Kaufman's department store, and I believe I mentioned this before. So my influence from mother was the sewing, and then also she took a course at Pitt in etching, and she couldn't draw, so she bought this, they had this little etching press that they were selling, but she bought this etching press and made me do the drawings for her class. And due to that, we used to get quite a few of those flyers from the American Associated Artists, because in those days, you know, there wasn't any much communication in the art world, and there wasn't a hell of a lot of place that you could read about anything, but I found that they would send me these flyers, and I decided that I liked these etchings of Grant Wood, Kuniyoshi, Thomas Benton, which I bought, fortunately. I wish I'd had more money and bought more at that point. But that was kind of a beginning of an art influence that I guess carried through. One of the other artists' names. Oh, Stuart Davis. I bought a Stuart Davis. But they were all etching, but they were like $5 and $10 in those days, and now they're worth anywhere between $1,500 and $2,000 up to $3,000. So
this project being sponsored by a Jewish group, I want to ask you, was there any religious influence in your artwork?
I wouldn't say too much. I went to temple, and there was, you know, as a Reformed Jew, I don't think there was a great, religious influence in our family. They were, my mother was the one who, again, was very religious. She was a great temple goer, especially after my father died, she became more and more interested in, she kept on until just before she died, she was still going down to the temple, to the sewing and to the Red Cross stuff, and work in the gift shop, and she was in her 90s then. So her influence was more just an example of how one does these, you know, one should have a religious background. My half-sister didn't believe at all in religion. She was an agnostic, which made it very difficult, because she's, being 12 years older than I was, she used to, 11, I forget, she always put religion down, if anything. But she had had infantile paralysis when she was a child, so she didn't really have what you would call a great deal of faith. And then later on, she married a Catholic man who also felt the same way. And they didn't have any religion at all, and they just didn't believe in religion. So I had these conflicting religious things in my life, I guess. But I was asked from time to time to do, you know, some religious things and I'd draw these things for temple or whatever. And I always enjoyed the stories as a child. And I remember I always wanted to be Queen Esther, like every child does, I guess. I passed on to Jamie when she was in school. In temple, she wanted to be Queen Esther too. But I continued to give my children the same, you know, a religious background as much as I could, with Passover and the holidays or whatever.
What about community influence in your art?
Any? Well, I don't. The only community influence I felt was that I worked for some of the organizations and doing all these little dumb things like doing the flowers for their organizations and doing the favors or doing the whole bit where you were in charge of the art. But I found that more of a detriment than anything from my standpoint, because I finally had to quit saying yes to things like that because I never had time to do my own work. So community-wise, though, I would say the Y certainly was a big help because of Sam's classes, and other than that, I don't guess there was, because I remember we had the war come along, and I was transplanted out of Pittsburgh for a few years, so I hadn't much community life after that. In the early days, the community influence was more going to temple and going swimming. We had a swimming pool there, learning to swim at the temple, learning to listening to Tom, what the heck his name was, the great guy who used to play the piano and the organ. I can't remember his name. He used to play at temple all the time, and he was, you know, musically, he was a great influence because I love music too.
Were there any financial considerations early on?
With going into art or not going into it? I don't really think that was a consideration. It was a consideration in not being able to buy the art that I wanted to buy, and I wanted to buy Jackson Pollock in 1940 and 41 and 42 and de Kooning and things like that. But as far as my own work was concerned, my family was that I had to work, I had to, you know, be raising children and had jobs and whatever. But my influence was that I went to work as a fashion coordinator, and that gave me, I guess, a community influence.
Were there any teachers or lessons in school early on that influenced you?
Well, I said Miss Stollard was the art teacher. And again, you know, art wasn't a big thing in the schools in those days. Nobody was really too interested in whether you did anything with art. They thought it was a stupid thing. And the only people that really cared about the art world were a few nice souls, like the museum people that I would meet when I would go with my mother. My teacher, one of the people that I felt was a huge influence on me, as much as besides Sam Rosenberg, was Robert Leppard at Carnegie Tech. I went to night school, or I took the art courses I took two classes. I was in Margaret Morrison and the art school at the same time. And Robert Lepper was one of my was a big influence, and I'm still very close and friendly to him. And because he was very modern compared to the rest of the teachers. And then there was a teacher by the name of Wilfred Radio, who was had a color course, color theory, and he taught the Munsell system. And for some reason or other, I was able, from the way I started thinking about color, I could get downtown and match a piece of fabric and come home with almost the right colors and for threads and whatever. But the greatest influence, I guess, was that I just drifted into these things. I really never had any formal training for example, in learning how to do plastics of any kind. I found my way in that. With the sculpture itself, I was always kind of interested in sculpture. And years ago, I remember going downtown and thinking I had enough money that day to buy some of that clay that was self-hardening. And I went home and took a Coca-Cola bottle and did this sculpture over a Coke bottle of a head. And I mean, if I get a little bit of money, I would spend it on art supplies usually. I did work when I was in high school. Gene Kalish and I, who is now Gene Samuels, used to work. We went down and got on the streetcar and got ourselves jobs at Horn's selling jewelry before we were of age. And then I went to work for Henry Rothenberg selling neckties and coffins at Gimbel's. But I always sort of had to work because the Depression had happened, and I needed the money to have spending money.
You mentioned Gene Kalish. Any other school friends that you would mention? Public school, college, whatever.
Oh, well, I had a lot of friends that were, I mean, they sort of, like, in what way? I mean, you mean from the standpoint of art or just?
Primarily art.
Well, Billy Edelman, who unfortunately died in the war, and Sandy Addison and Gene Kalish and I used to, Sandy used to pick us all up after the light classes we used to go to, and we'd go out and listen, have a barbecue and listen to Lights Out and things like that. But Billy Edelman was in the class too. He happened to be a very good artist. And art-wise, Sidney Simon, Orrin Rayfield. I mean, I used to date Orrin, so when we were in high school, we were both really, you know, very interested in life. So this was back.
For the record, you appear to be in good health. I guess that your health has been conducive to your prolific output.
Well, I think it helps to be, it helps always to be healthy. Strangely enough, I've had a lot of operations, which you don't want to hear about, but include from time to time I've had, I think I've been opened up more than anybody probably know. I always thought maybe they had a zipper on me in my early days. Gallbladders and parotid gland tumors, and I even was operated on when I had a tumor on the ovary that had to be operated on when I was in college. So I don't know that I was so healthy. I think I'm healthier now than I ever was, and then I had that was my feet.
But you kept on going.
Oh, yes. I never felt that those things should stop one.
Okay. It seems...
Never serious things, thank God.
It seems like it would be redundant to say that art is a consuming interest from early on. Is that about right?
Yeah, I'd say that.
Well, let's talk about your husband's influence.
Well, he was very helpful in the fact that he was willing to, when I would, when we'd go out to, after we were married, the art class that Sam had was two nights a week, and I'd have to, you know, be leaving the house around 7 o'clock or 7:30, I can't remember. So it would leave him stuck with the dishes and the kids. And he was always very encouraging about my doing that. He always, he never was, had any great artistic ability. But being, I guess, an engineer, his interests were in trying to help me whenever he could. And one of the ways that was a big help was when he purchased with a partner American Forge and Manufacturing, and I started working on these sculptures out in the plant. So, I mean, he'd think I was a little nuts, but I'd walk around there and say, oh, that's beautiful, and, you know.
What? Do you like that piece?
So you'd say he was a modern man, husband of a liberated woman before his time?
Yes, I'd say so. I made him into one of those, I guess. But you know, it was cute because our kids were sort of became helpful in that sense. Once, when Jamie was an infant, when she was not an infant, but when she was, seven. I guess she was about 7 years old. Was when I had Terry, and so. From the time he was born, she became the sort of built-in house babysitter, and she'd feed him and do things like that when I had to run away to do the art. So even the kids were kind of pitched in.
Do you think that your influence on these metal sculptures came because of Herb's involvement in the forging, or do you think it would have come anyway?
Oh, it's hard to say. I think the people like that I was around were David Smith, for example, was a very large influence on my what I did. But it was kind of involved in our business because he came to Pittsburgh, he and Theodore Stamos, and they were the jurors for the Associated Artists, and they awarded me the Best of Show for my painting, and I had never met him before, but I had seen his, Irvin, I had seen his show at the Museum of Modern Art, his first show that he had there, and Irv noticed that he had done forgings. So, of course, he was very excited about that, and when he came to Pittsburgh to jury the show, and the night of the awards dinner, he wanted to meet me, and when he found out that Irv, as he called him, was an ironmonger, he was just absolutely ecstatic. And due to that, we had a very strong friendship that developed. We made parts for David for his, as a matter of fact, for his last show before he was killed. Irv had made some parts at American Forge We had several drawings of his that he gave us. A couple were destroyed in the fire. I still have one or two things that weren't destroyed. I have letters from him and all these things that were involved in his earth making him these parts. And when we went to Italy, when I went to Italy to have my show, I went to Spoleto to check on his work. Strangely and peculiarly enough, because of the time difference, when I was looking at his stuff, trying to find his stuff in Spoleto and in the amphitheater, is that almost the exact time when he was killed, and it was really weird. I didn't find out till the next day when Clem Greenberg came to my show and told me. But anyway, we became very friendly, and I was at Bolton Landing with him. We went up there and visited him. And so he said to Irv one day, "Why, with all these marvelous things in your plant, don't you allow your wife to come in and use them?" And I said, "Oh, he wouldn't let me in that plant, probably." And so from that time on, he said, "Just go in and make hundreds of them. Just don't worry about it. Just make them." Well, of course, it was a little hard for me because you can't just, I mean, I did it, but it wasn't as easy as it was for him because he had his own plant in Bolton Landing where he had a guy who worked for him, and that's all they did every day. But probably if I had taken and made my own little plant like he has, I could have done it. But I did do quite a few. And Irv was very helpful in that. He allowed me to do this. Of course, at that point, the unions weren't such a big problem, but once the unions came in, that was when doing a lot of metal sculptures there went out the window and I had to start using fabricators. Once you start using fabricators, your expenses are enormously multiplied. Plus, the materials started going up and up and up, and now it's gotten to the point where I don't do metal sculptures unless I have a commission, because it's just gotten too costly. I mean, I'll do small models and things like that for people and then say, okay, here's what it will be like if you want to take it or leave it.
Did Irv design and make these chairs, the frames of these chairs?
No, these are Sapporiti. No, he didn't make this kind. This is very highly polished things. He did rough forgings are rough. They get hammered, they go into an oven, and that's a forging out there, that one called transplant. That's a drop off from a forging. Some of these pieces what I would do was I would take a piece of metal and to have them scarf it, which while I was standing there, we would roughly burn this so that or I would find a drop off that was done like that that I liked. And I'd go to he'd take me around to other forge shops that he was friendly with, I'd go to scrap yards and do his, a lot of his, contacts in business. Phil Wimmer, for example, was one of them, and he would give me a lot of nice materials, and people were very, very kind, and, in those days, they weren't so stingy with the scrap, but, because, materials weren't that as expensive, but even then, stainless was always, and brass were always expensive, and the fact that they gave them to me was quite marvelous.
I read an article amongst the things that you loaned me this week by one of your children describing your art. It appears as though your children are very supportive of you also.
Oh, yeah. They are very, they're kind of been one pushing me a lot of times where I get sort of disgusted. And my daughter will call me up and say, "How about, trying a gallery, this gallery or that gallery, or why don't you, somebody like your work, let me help you, send me some slides." Of course, she's pretty busy with her career now, too. But Terry was also very, very supportive. When he was very little, he used to come over to my studio, and he really always had an eye. And he'd come in there and sit there, and about 7 years old, and sit there and tell me which paintings that he liked. And as time went on, he started, he was a good, very good at writing. And so while he was still in school, he had been, I forget how we got about it, but Arts Magazine, I told him to send one of his articles to Arts Magazine, and he did, and I asked him to do reviews, and so he reviewed quite a few shows for Arts Magazine. But he's always had an eye. He also is very good at drawing. He was one of the ones that I would say is the most artistic with his hands, although Jamie does some marvelous things with the... She started years ago using a typeface because in New York she could get a hold of these typeface drawers, and her husband, she was only married for 2 years, but her husband had this, he had access to a lot of typeface and things like that. So she started doing that, making these boxes and things out of it when she wasn't working. And John, strangely enough, I have a bunch of his drawings which were marvelous, but he never pursued it because he was always too much more interested in economics and, you know, politics and finances. He was much more, you know, a man of the world, let's put it, and thank God for that. But he did do very good drawings. I kept them, and I couldn't believe some of them. They were very funny. And I kept all my kids' drawings because my mother kept a couple of some of mine that hadn't burned up in the fire. Because they hadn't burned up in the fire, but we still had them, I mean. But there was one where I had a lady Godiva on a horse, and I always thought about it because whenever these kids, you know, started doing things, I could see how most anybody, I think, if they had some talent, could develop it. But you have to have an eye for these things, and they have to have a feel for them. And I guess that's what puts people into art or not puts them into it.
You talked about finance, economics, and so forth. What about the business of art?
Well, that's the pain part. That's the part I hate. I always had wished that I could have had someone to be the one to do all this. Irv tries. I finally ended up getting a girl who comes in and tries to do, you know, some secretarial work for me. But it's expensive not to have one because you lose track of things if you don't keep good records. And so you really have to be pretty well organized. And slides are important and numbering system. I mean, early on, excuse me. Early on, I didn't have this, and I lost track of a lot of things, and things would get loaned out and never come back. And so one has to spend some money on these things. I always refused to pay for art shows in New York because I always felt that was demeaning, and consequently, I waited until I was able to get to a really good gallery, wanted my work in New York, and I worked with her. She was on the par with Betty Parsons and all this, Bertha Schaefer. Unfortunately, Bertha Schaefer died after I'd had two shows with her in New York of cancer, and from that point on, I found it very difficult as a woman to find galleries. There was this great deal of prejudice against women in those days, and there still is a lot of... It's not so much in Pittsburgh, really, but in New York it's always been a major problem. A lot of the dealers won't take women. Or if they do... I get letters sending slides in, and I would not say... They think my name is a man, so they would... call me, they'd say they were interested in my work, and they'd call me to come in, and when they found out I was a woman, then it was them. And, but I did get to a lot of good things in spite of it, I guess.